What is love? This is Valentine's week. I say it every year, I think. This is Reese's favorite Hallmark holiday coming up this week. So if you get a chance, make sure you give Reese a big Valentine hug today on your way out the door. But title of the sermon, What is Love This Morning? That's what we're going to talk about since we are focused on love this week and Valentine's coming up on Friday. According to legend, there was a 3rd century Christian who lived in Rome named Valentine. He was imprisoned during one of the periodic persecutions against Christians and was sentenced to death. While in prison, Valentine was able to gather violets outside his cell window. He sent them to his loved ones with a message, "Remember your Valentine." After his death, he was canonized by the Catholic Church, so now we have St. Valentine's Day, a day when we send cards to our loved ones asking them to remember us. Valentine's Day, gentlemen, if you didn't know, is this coming Friday. There, you've all been warned. Chances are you've probably not heard a whole lot of Valentine's Day sermons. I certainly haven't preached a whole lot of them. But I can't think of a more appropriate holiday to sermonize about than a holiday talking about love. And this sermon's going to be on love, marriage, commitment, all that nice ooey-gooey stuff, Reese. But even if you're not married, even if you're thinking about getting married, dating, if you're in any kind of relationship as a Christian, which we all are, I ask that you would pay attention to what God has to say this morning. Through romantic relationships, through friendships, through godly brother-sister relationships, we all have something to learn each and every day about love. Jesus preached on no greater topic when he was here on earth than love. So this morning I'm going to talk about two things of what love is. First, love is obviously a commitment. A commitment to one another. There's an interesting story of love and courtship in Genesis chapter 24. If you want to highlight that or write that down in your bulletin. Genesis chapter 4, it talks about how Sarah has died. Everybody remembers the story of Abraham and Sarah. Sarah has now died. Abraham is very old. Abraham arranges for his servant to find his son Isaac a wife. The servant goes to Haran, finds Rebecca, arranges for her to return to marry Isaac. It was that easy back then, guys. You didn't have to do a whole lot of the dating thing, apparently. But that story, that pretty much constitutes everything, the bulk of chapter 24. But it's the conclusion of chapter 24 that attracts our attention, I believe. When Isaac and Rebekah meet for the very first time. Guys, remember when you met the love of your life for the very first time? Or anybody, friend, whatever, and what kind of circumstance that was at the time. And this is how, starting in verse 62, this is when Isaac and Rebekah met for the first time. It says, "Now Isaac had come from Beer Lahai Roi, for he was living in the Negev. He went out to the field one evening to meditate, and as he looked up, he saw camels approaching. Rebekah also looked up and saw Isaac. She got down from her camel and asked the servant, 'Who is that man in the field coming to meet us?' 'He is my master,' the servant answered. So she took her veil and covered herself. Then the servant told Isaac all he had done. Isaac brought her into the tent of his mother Sarah, and he married Rebekah. So she became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death." I would doubt to say you could hardly call this love at first sight. I'm guessing that's not how your courtship went. If you are married or dating somebody right now, that's probably not how your first date went or how you even came about to be husband and wife. There was no engagement ring, certainly no premarital counseling, no wedding ceremony. Rebekah never got to read Annabelle Morgan's The Total Woman. And Isaac never read James Dobson's What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women. Isaac simply took Rebecca into his tent and married her. They changed the name on their mailbox to Mr. and Mrs. Isaac, and they lived happily ever after. And we know the story of Isaac and Rebecca and so forth. You notice anything unusual here, though, about the end? Shouldn't this read, Isaac loved Rebecca, then she became his wife? In this simple story, there's an enduring lesson. It's found in that one phrase, so she became his wife, and he loved her. She became his wife, and he loved her. It wasn't vice versa. It wasn't he loved her, and then she became his wife. I'm sure today, if we would tell this story, it would be Isaac loved Rebecca, then she became married, or she became his wife. That's how we do things today. I think that's how it should be today. Our society equates love with romanticism, and love is defined in terms of hormones and pheromones. And when those are gone, more times than not, so is love in relationships, in any kind of relationships. When those feelings disappear, be it a romantic relationship, friendship, whatever the case may be, we think that the love is gone. And we just move on. Not so here. How is love defined here? I would say in terms of commitment and covenant. Love is definitely defined by God as a commitment in any kind of relationship. A commitment to your spouse, a commitment to your church, a commitment to your friends, a commitment to your children, your grandchildren. When you choose to love and be a part of somebody's life or whatever the case may be, you are choosing to commit yourself to them, to make a covenant with them. Commitment means commitment is the foundation of marriage. Feelings come and go, but covenant is always the baseline. Always the baseline. George Bernard Shaw once said of the vows two people make at a wedding. He says, when two people are under the influence of the most violent, most insane, most elusive, and most transient of passions, they are required to swear that they will remain in that excited, abnormal, and exhausting condition continuously until death do they part. Obviously, Shaw missed it. It is precise. Sleep, because those feelings don't always last, that we take those vows. Life circumstances happen. Feelings change. Feelings strengthen. Feelings weaken. Things happen. Someone else said that the oath which is sworn in a traditional Christian marriage ceremony is not a ludicrous attempt to prolong the unprolongable. Excitement and passion will wax and wane in any relationship. In any life, the Christian covenant of marriage is God's way of bringing order and reason into the exciting, delightful, and perilous chaos he himself brought into the world when he created male-female erotic love. Lynn Mitchell said that. How appropriate. That's exactly what God created in marriage, the marriage covenant, the commitment of a loved one to another loved one, when the rest of the world is going crazy, when things come and go, there's that commitment. Like I said, be it a spouse, be it a brother, a sister, someone you love and have committed yourself to. We have couples in our church who have been married 50 plus years. Raise your hand if you've been married over 50 years. Yeah, we got a few of them here. I know Keith and Nancy are one of those in our church. But yeah, Ed and Pat, Peggy, and how long were you and Dave married? 57 years. Bob? He had to look at Joanna. 58 years. How does a marriage last 50 plus years? It's when two people take their covenant serious. I would guess if I asked any three of these people, with our couples, Peggy, Bob, Pat and Ed, I would guess you took your covenant very seriously. Life situations change. Life happens. Children come, children go. Life circumstances happen. Death happens. Feelings come and go. Sin happens. A lot of different things happen. Tragedy happens. Joys happen. You have great things that happen in your family. You have low things that happen in your family. But when a couple chooses to take their covenant seriously, that's when relationships last. 50 plus years, maybe even on till death do they part, is what God's, what you promise God. So love is definitely, definitely a commitment to one another. It is definitely defined by God as a covenant. God made a covenant with you when he gave his one and only begotten son. Reagan read that this morning, John 3:16. God so loved you. It wasn't just a feeling. Now, don't get me wrong. God has feelings for you. But because of that, he chose to make a covenant with you. I love you so much. I will give you my son. And I will make it possible to spend all eternity with you. See, our covenant with God isn't like the marital covenant. We say, till death do us part. Because we know when we go to heaven, Jesus made it very clear, there's no male and female. You're no longer husband and wife. You are children of God, and you're going to spend eternity worshiping God. But we've made a covenant here on earth, those who are married, that I will be faithful, and I will commit to you till death do us part. God says, I'm going to be faithful and I'm going to be committed to you for all eternity. What a blessing. So God defines love as a commitment, not just till death do us part, but for all eternity. When we are faithless to him, he remains faithful to us. So number one, if you have your outline in the Bible, there's only 2 points. You're welcome. Number one, is love is a commitment. Number two, and I don't want to leave it out, love is definitely a feeling. I'm not going to stand here before you and tell you love has nothing to do with feelings. It absolutely has something to do with feelings. Love is a commitment, unquestionably. However, there's a danger that we might limit our definition of love to just commitment. Love is a commitment, but love is also a feeling. Part of our problem as English-speaking people is there's only one word for love in the English language. That covers a whole lot of ground. You can use that. We use that word love all the time. At my house, I've heard people say, I love pizza. I love cheeseburger. I love that movie. Or I love that car. We use that word love all the time. Obviously, you're not going to stay committed to that pizza. You only stay committed to that pizza for so long. You're not going to stay committed to that car because it's going to disappear soon. It's going to fail you before you're going to fail it, probably. The Greek has 4 words for love. Words that define love in terms of commitment, and other words that define it in terms of feelings. So when you just say love in the ancient Greek and even in the Hebrew in the Old Testament, there's not just one word for love and that covers it all. There were words for love that meant commitment. And then there was also words that meant these are feelings. These loving, the love that a parent has for a child. That's not romantic love. That's not erotic love. The love that we have for a brother or sister in the church. That's completely different than marital love. The love that we have for pizza. That's a different kind of love altogether, or even slang. It is wrong to simply say love is commitment, period. I don't want to stand here before you and say that. True. But it does not exhaust the Bible's definition of love. Besides all those passages about leaving and cleaving and not putting asunder, our books like Proverbs and Song of Solomon. I don't preach from Song of Solomon very often. In fact, you'll probably hear one a decade. Greg about fell out of his chair when I mentioned Song of Solomon. All right. It can be embarrassing to preach out of that book from time to time. But the Song of Solomon is about erotic love, romantic love. And some say it shouldn't even be in the Bible. Some people are embarrassed when they read it. Obviously, God put every word in the Bible for a reason. And churches sometimes have typified it, allegorized it, watered it down to where it doesn't mean a whole lot. And you very rarely hear Sunday school messages from Song of Solomon. You very rarely hear sermons from Song of Solomon. But it's a beautiful book. If you've never read it before, read it from cover to cover, and you want to really truly see what love as a commitment and love as a feeling looks like between a couple, God's way of seeing each other. Man, read through it. And none of this changes the fact that Song of Solomon is about feelings. It's definitely about the spark that exists between two people who are absolutely in love, who have made the commitment to one another. And two passages which reveal this is Song of Solomon. I am going to turn to Song of Solomon, all right? Note this down. You might want to write it down. Joel's going to read from the Song of Solomon. Bear with me. I might turn red a couple times. A few of these passages are a little bit embarrassing to read. But listen to the voice of God in these passages. First thing I want to share is Song of Solomon. Some Bibles call it Song of Songs, depending on your translation. Chapter 5, starting in verse 10. This is a husband who is appreciated by a wife. Listen to the words. My lover is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. His head is purest gold. His hair is wavy and black as raven. His eyes are like doves by the water streams, washed in milk, mounted like jewels. His cheeks are like beds of spice yielding perfume. His lips are like lilies dripping with myrrh. His arms are rods of gold set with chrysolite. His body is like polished ivory decorated with sapphires. His legs are pillars of marble set on bases of pure gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as its cedars. His mouth is sweetness itself. He is altogether lovely. This is my lover, this my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. I highly doubt many of you men will get a Valentine's card like that this week. But can you hear God's definition of love? Through a woman who loves and appreciates her husband, pays attention to the positives of him. It's very, very easy. Men and women both do it. It's very easy to stay stuck on the negatives about anybody. It's very easy to say, well, he always does something or she never does that. Not just in a marital relationship, but any kind of relationship. And get stuck on saying, you know, focusing on the negative on somebody. Here is a woman who absolutely chooses to see the positive things in her husband, both physical, mental, and spiritual, letting the world know what she appreciates. Part of loving one another is sharing with the world the person you love and why you love them and what they bring into your life, the joy that they give you, the help that they bring to you, the reason you choose to make a commitment to them. I think that's beautiful, and I also love Song of Solomon chapter 4, and I promise you this is the last scripture I'm going to read from Song of Solomon. This one embarrasses me more than the other one. I used to giggle as a kid when I read this, but listen, all right? verses 1 through 7. This is a husband. This is a wife who is absolutely appreciated by her husband. How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Mount Gilead. Guys, any of you used that one before? Your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn, coming up from the washing. Each has its twin. Not one of them is alone. So she has a mouthful of teeth. She hasn't lost her teeth. He appreciates that. Your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of a pomegranate. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built with elegance. On it hang 1,000 shields, and all of them shields of warriors. Your two breasts are like two fawns, like twin fawns of a gazelle that browse among the lilies. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee, I will go to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of incense. All beautiful you are, my darling. There is no flaw in you. Women, wouldn't you like your husband to see you and find no flaw in you? Guys, are you the one person in the entire world who makes sure that that lady knows there is no flaw in your eyes? We fail at that. I know we fail at that miserably. But that is something to strive for, fellas. God gave us women to be our helpmates, not to be our servants, not to be our whipping posts and to just lash out when the rest of the world's crumbling around us or life isn't going our way and they're the ones that are just going to listen to us complain. No. God gave you her to put her on a pedestal and to love her, to take care of her, to lay your life down for her as Christ laid down his life for you. One of the highest points of biblical teaching about husband-wife relationship is found in the book of Proverbs. I want to read that to you as well. I'm done with the mushy-ushy stuff, Reese. All right. Proverbs chapter 5, if you want to turn to that or write that down in your bulletin. Proverbs 5, just starting in verse 15 there. Solomon here, again, this is Solomon giving advice, giving wisdom on relationship, giving wisdom on marital relationship, giving wisdom on really any kind of relationship or anything that God gives to you. He says, drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares, let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth, a loving doe, a graceful deer. May her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love. Why be captivated, my son, by an adulteress? Why embrace the bosom of another man's wife? For a man's ways are in the full view of the Lord's, and he examines all his paths. Man, here we're told by Solomon, who's told by God, enjoy, savor, treasure, cherish what you have as opposed to what you don't have. Pay close attention to what God has given you, what he's laid before you, wherever he's put you, the family that he put you in, the marriage that he put you in, the community he put you in, the church he put you in, whatever the case may be. Savor it, treasure it, cherish it, take care of it. And quit paying attention to what you don't have. Quit being obsessed with what somebody else has. Because let me tell you, somebody else has troubles too. and you don't want their troubles. Another community has troubles too. Other friendships have troubles too. Pay attention to what God's given you. And since we're talking about love and Valentine's, I do want to apply that to the marital relationship as well. God has placed somebody very, very special in your arms. Love him or her with commitment. Cherish, treasure. Be everything you can be for that person. Ask God daily for strength, courage, and wisdom to be the leader of your relationship, men, to be the leader of your marriage, giving your wife reason to submit biblically to you, and women to love and to cherish your husband. When he chooses to lay his life down for you, as Christ laid his life down for you, take the biblical approach and to continue to be faithful, loving, treasuring, and savoring your husband as well. So this morning I just want to say, if your marriage has lost its spark, don't be satisfied with that. And please don't say something dumb like, well, love is basically commitment. We like to say that. Well, the feelings might not be there, but I'm still committed. I'm still faithful. No. God wants you to have feelings. God has feelings for you. Don't ever think different. God jumps for joy for you. He's loved you. We've said it before. He's loved you since before he placed you in your mother's womb. He's been excited about you. He loves watching the different stages of your life. He loves placing you in different places of ministry. He loves walking with you through the hills and through the valleys. He definitely has feelings for you. Don't ever be satisfied in any kind of relationship with, well, the spark just has kind of gone out. I've lost my fervor. I've lost my heat. Love is basically a commitment. It's that, but it's so much more. When you're talking about marriage, it better be that, and it better be a whole lot more. And I can't think of any other example outside of Jesus to show us commitment, to show us love, to show us feeling in his walk with us. Yeah, we always talk about having a walk with Jesus. Don't forget, Jesus chose to have a walk with you. He chose to partner up with you in life. I find it very interesting. God could have described his church in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different relationships. God decided to describe his church as a marital relationship. We are the bride of Christ. He is the bridegroom. We, the church, are his bride. He loves you. He loves us. He cherishes you, cherishes us. He wants to be a part of every part of the church's life, of your life, your relationships. And I can't think of any other person to celebrate this morning, this week during Valentine's than Jesus. The one who showed you what love is. The one who continues to love you. The one who has kept his commitment, kept his covenant with you for all eternity. And the one who showed us love by hanging on a cross. The one who showed us grace. The one who showed us forgiveness. And this morning I want to celebrate that. During every Sunday morning, we give you an opportunity, an invitation to give your life to Jesus Christ. If you heard nothing else this morning, I want you to hear that Jesus loves you. He died for you. He has forgiveness for you. He has grace for you. He's just waiting for you to come and to accept that. He's waiting for you to take him as Lord. So we invite you this morning, if you've never before made Jesus Christ your Lord and Savior, we invite you to do that this morning. Come forward. I'll take your confession of faith, pray with you, wherever you are in that. If you're ready to be baptized, we'll baptize you. If you don't know what baptism is all about, talk to you. I'll talk to you about it. If you need to make that commitment to God this morning, we offer you that invitation. For the rest of us who have already made that commitment, stood before the Lord and the church, and have made him Lord of your life, I just ask that you would sing the words, Jesus paid it all. I believe that's what we're going to sing this morning. Jesus paid it all. As you sing the words of that song, think about the commitment God made to you. Think about how he showed his love to you. And let's go into the world this week, starting in our homes, into the workplace, into the community, as we serve one another in church and with the church. Pay attention to how Jesus paid it all, and let's pay it forward this week. Let's stand, and let's make those commitments to Jesus.